This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 331. Today, Andrew sits down to catch up with Simpraxis Consulting's Mark Anderson and Julie Turner in a Microsoft Ignite 2019 short episode, recorded live November the 5th, 2019.
For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know that they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking, how about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl? That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 groups governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it for free for 30 days at ShareGate.com/collegeshow.
Hello, everybody. I'm going to start out by first saying I lied in the intro. This is not a short episode. We intended for it to be a short episode. But earlier today, I sat down with Simpraxis Consulting's Mark Anderson and Julie Turner, who are both SharePoint and or Office MVPs. And I wanted to find out some of their thoughts on the Microsoft conference, specifically the Microsoft Ignite 2019 conference. I want to get some of their thoughts on what's new, what they were excited about that's been announced so far at the conference, and what they're looking forward to learn more and getting their hands on going forward. As it usually happens when I sit down with Mark and Julie, this went a little bit longer than just a short episode of like 20-ish minutes that we were aiming for. We ended up having a full, rich conversation on where things are going. We spent a lot of time at the end too, talking about Project Cortex, a great new initiative from Microsoft around knowledge management. So let's go ahead and jump straight to the interview and hear what they have to say.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
All right, I'm here again on the expo floor at Ignite. I'm here with Julie and Mark. Mark, how are you guys doing?
Julie's doing great.
How you doing, Mark?
We're having a lot of fun. Nothing like being at Ignite, right?
Nothing like being at Ignite. Yeah, how about you, Julie?
Yeah, no, Ignite is really good. It's a lot. It's super overwhelming. I told my husband yesterday when we were on the phone, I'm like, you know how it feels like when you go into a concert and then you're coming out of a concert and you're walking with all the people? That was my day all day long.
Yeah.
So if you would just real briefly introduce yourself so people know who we're talking to. We'll come back to the very end and, you know, how can they find you and stuff like that. But Mark, go ahead and introduce yourself first. We started with you first.
Okay. Well, I'm Mark Anderson. Julie and I have a company together called Simpraxis Consulting. Now, she can't say that. We have a great little group of people. We have a lot of fun. We do work around some SharePoint, Office 365, Azure. So this conference is, in a lot of ways, our ecosystem. You know, everybody we see walking around with the green badges and stuff like that are people who we pay attention to in the realm. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. And Julie?
So I'm Julie Turner, and I am Mark's partner in Simpraxis Consulting. See, I said it anyway. Yeah, and so it's the two of us plus Dark Cash Peterson, Todd Clint, and Emily Mancini. And we have a super, super good time helping our customers implement their Office 365 solutions, whatever that might be. So, yeah.
Awesome. So we're here the second day of Ignite, sitting on the showroom floor, as you can tell from the ambiance in the background. And we've already gotten through the first day, got through the morning of the second day. I wanted to stop you guys, and I just wanted to find out a little bit of, you know, what do you think about the show so far? Like, what's kind of taken you back? So what is, like, first impressions of of what you've had so far from the show. It can be content, can be layout, can be the weather's not nearly as hot as it normally is. I mean, whatever it ends up being. It's a good thing the night wasn't last week, I'll tell you. It was 90-some-odd degrees on Wednesday. We got a cold front that came through. Well, for us, it was a cold front that came through on Friday, made it much nicer. So, yeah, so first impressions of Ignite.
Well, you stole my whole weather thing, but, you know, it's interesting. I've been joking with the Microsoft people that they're still on a 3-year product development cycle. It's just that we had to follow along with them on this one.
Right.
And at Ignite this time, I'm feeling like we've sort of gotten over that hump. We're up on the Mesa. We've made it through that 3-year cycle. Now they've got an entirely new platform and they're starting to rapidly roll stuff out. You know, the amount of stuff that they announced at SPC in May that's already happened. And then the amount of stuff Jeff went through so much stuff yesterday.
Jeff Tepper, sorry.
You could barely absorb it all in one session. So I think we're also seeing that I don't do a lot with Azure, but I'm seeing that too. You know, you're just seeing more and more capability and technologies being stacked on top of this great new level of platform now that they've got a lot to talk about.
I think the same thing from the development perspective, right? You know, everything was so immature to start with. You know, we would be doing SharePoint framework and it's like, we're bolding things together. You know, you had the great thing about what we need to blog post about what we need to tie together, you know, for the next wave. But you're seeing maturity in things that we didn't have maturity about before. And I guess I would speak to the API endpoint maturity that we're starting to see because I went to Yina Arenas' graph session yesterday, and the list of things that she's calling out as new things that are coming out, it's maturing that surface, giving us a way to really start building very cool and intricate solutions for Office 365 using the Azure ecosystem and whatever.
You mentioned that Yina's session, they have like a ridiculous amount of announcements that are going on. Do they do like a roll-up kind of a link that we can share with people that you maybe have, or
Graph What's New, right? And so, you'll include it. Probably,
yeah, aka.ms/graph what's new, all one word?
All one word.
Cool, make sure we get that in the show notes. Okay, so let's take a step back. So yesterday morning, did you guys watch the Vision keynote or did you attend the Vision keynote yesterday morning with Satya Nadella?
Yeah, remotely we did, yeah. It was a lot. We were sitting there kind of looking at each other going, a lot of this stuff is not things that it's interesting to hear, but it's not stuff that really affects us directly. But again, it was that maturity thing. You know, I was a little surprised by some of like the being able to tie clouds together. Mm. That was like, everybody's going, that's going to be a premium service, but still like that sort of, it's not kumbaya. I mean, it's business, right? But still the ability to tie clouds together, I was like, wow, that's not something I saw coming. And of course, my son lost his baby mind about Minecraft Earth. Like, he wants that so bad. If you can imagine a 7-year-old, to him, he thinks that's going to be real. So, I mean, not the most business savvy thing, but still, like, just an incredible amount of advancement, I think, announced.
Was that not an awkward demo? Because it seemed like the Minecraft people had the hardest time with their own demo.
Super awkward, yet if you had saw the one they recorded the last time, it was the same one and they did it a lot better. But I think, yeah, it was definitely a little bit awkward.
a little strange on that one. So, Mark, what about you? Did you do the Vision keynote as well?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Like Julie said, there was a lot presented there that just isn't part of the stuff that we tend to touch. But one thing I was realizing as I was watching all of that and other sessions since is that the quality of these platforms, you know, even some of the stuff we were looking at in Azure that I'd never seen before. So, but it looks so usable from the sense that, you know, I'm almost thinking that our jobs is going to, over not that much time, become more of helping guide people through these things as opposed to building things for them. And I don't see that as a bad thing. The complexity in all of this is not the complexity of, oh, you've got to learn this new programming language or you've got to get deep down into the bits of the operating system or something. It's understanding that all of these things are there and how they fit together and how you can think about implementing them. It's a lot like Minecraft. We take the blocks and we put them together in interesting ways and we build worlds that are really cool and valuable without necessarily writing a hell of a lot of code. You know, I mean, just like Flow, known as Power Automate, allowed us to just sort of put steps together and make things happen. I think we're seeing more of that coming across the entire Microsoft 365 ecosystem. You're going to need to know what all these things are and how they fit together, but you're not necessarily going to have to work hard to turn them on.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you made. I started to notice the same thing where I feel like we're more at a point, not just in the Azure space, but also in the Office 365 space, where we've gotten more to where we have to build less stuff. And it's more that the stuff that we're building is focusing specifically on the business problem as being, and we're able to, stuff that we shouldn't have to worry about. So like if I'm looking at something like Kubernetes, I don't want to have to worry about maintaining the uptime and scaling my application. But if I build it in a certain way, it makes it really easy for an automation service to be able to do all of that stuff for me. And being able to tie different clouds together and being able to once they're connected and being able to easily deploy things from one to another, having to maintain, I'm able to focus on the business problems that my customers have and not building a lot of that plumbing cruft that I would have to build in the past, and just focus on less stuff for me to maintain, less stuff for me to build, but I get so much more powerful features. And thanks to all this AI stuff that they're doing as well, and a lot of the machine learning, they can learn a lot from, not at scale, not just about problems that our applications may be having, but how we all are having it the same way, and they can provide solutions for that to make life easier and stuff like that. So it's a fun place to be right now.
You get to focus on the problem for the customer versus the nuts and bolts of how you're going to get that problem deployed, for instance, right? You guys interviewed, I can't remember his name, so I don't want to try to even butcher that, but about CI/CD pipelines. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, that SharePoint framework deployment using a CI/CD pipeline, wow, that's a life changer for me, right? Because I had to spend a lot of time, you know, building those pipelines, building that part of the solution. And now it's like, oh, I've got a YAML file and that's just going to happen. And now I spend the bulk of my client billable time actually focusing on their problem, not how I'm going to get the solution to their problem into their environment.
That's a great example, because that's something I was talking, actually working on that chapter of my course right now, but I was talking to somebody about, like, why should I care about this? What does this really do for me? I'm like, all right, here's a scenario. You ever built something and you got a small problem with it and it's not mission critical? Maybe it's a typo. Maybe there's a color that's off. Maybe there's an alignment thing. Something relatively small that needs to get fixed eventually. But you're just like, you know, I don't want to take the time to do it right now because it's going to take time to actually roll this thing out and get it all done and all that stuff. And it's just, I'd rather wait until I have a few things I got to fix at one time.
A calling change that takes you 5 minutes is now going to take you 3 hours after you try to deploy it.
Right.
So 5 minutes becomes 3 hours. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And now I can go in and make the fix real quick, commit my changes and push them and walk away. And I know in the next like 10 minutes, it's going to be rolled out and we're all done. And if at any point it's not, I get told it's not because I broke something along the way and they've let me know about that. That's the stuff that enables us to focus on the problems and get problems solved and to build and to create optimizations and functionalities.
And we're giving better value to our clients too.
Right.
And that, I mean, for us at Simpraxis, that's one of our biggest issues. Like, we always want to just be providing value to the client. And when we have to bill them for things that we don't feel like we would want to have to bill them for, but it's the part of the job, it's a bummer, right? You want to just provide them value for the problem that they have.
I think a lot of this is also helping us to, I think we'll be able to start thinking about things much more iteratively. We've always talked about iterative development, but now I think it's going to be, you know, iterative configuration, iterative block assembly or something, right? I mean, there are still a lot of things that are going to be hard, but I think we're seeing the promise of things that people were talking about like way back in the 90s, you know, well, we're just going to do object-oriented programming and all this stuff and it'll all be solved, but it didn't get easier for a really long time. And I think we're seeing just a general trend to being able to break things down into smaller projects, get them done, and not be afraid if we don't get it all right.
Yeah.
Because the next project could be another, you know, it's like with Agile with a big A, you know, you might have week-long sprints. But at the end of that week, people are actually getting something.
Yeah.
And so from an end user perspective, when, you know, you talk, I mean, I remember talking to companies years ago, you know, look, we're going to roll out a new intranet in 3 years. If you said that now, people would think you were insane,
yeah.
Right? I mean, how about in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily that simple, but, you know, our time spans and the way we can satisfy business needs have gotten so much shorter.
Yeah.
And I think we can really start to encourage people not to do these mammoth IT projects, break everything down into achievable pieces. And take those building blocks, get something out there that people can react to, and then you can keep tuning. So, you know, sort of the minimum viable product idea. Your end users are going to love you for that stuff. And so forget all of this IT BS that we've been living with for a long time and start to try to think from the end user perspective, how can we glue these things together in better ways, and try it and see how it goes, and then iterate on that in, based on what feedback you get.
It's a good point too. We've been able to do that for a little bit, not for terribly long time. We've been able to do that for a little bit. But what I think is different now is I think that the end users and the customers are now realizing what we can do. And so now when they want us to come in and do these big projects, we can tell them it doesn't make sense because we can spend all this time architecting this great solution right now and we're going to roll out over the next year and a half. But in a year and a half, this great thing using all this great stuff you just saw at Ignite, it's all going to be outdated. There's going to be other stuff that's there. But we planned it, so we got to build it. And now we're kind of painting ourselves into a corner. It's better if we can just get something in your hands, and then now what can we go from here? We can have a general guideline of where do we want to go. Like, I want to drive up the East Coast, but I don't need to plan out every single rest stop I'm going to stop at. We're just going to figure it out along the way. There's a cool restaurant. Let's go over there. Oh, cool. We didn't realize we were going to go that close to the beach.
You know, I think one thing that the burden that then puts on everyone, including the end users, is to try to understand what's coming. You're going to drive up the East Coast. You know you want to end up in Boston. Mm-hmm. You could take whatever route you want to get up there, but you got to be there Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have your eye on something. You've got to understand when you're designing things that, you know, there's this new thing that's coming. We know it's not going to be there yet, but let's not paint ourselves into a corner where we can't do those things.
Right.
So keeping yourself informed. This is one of the sessions that I'm helping Matt Wade with, a session on Friday. How do you stay up to date with all of this stuff? How do you keep track of all of these changes in this space? And I think that's becoming the burden as opposed to using new technology necessarily, you know, coming up with some new way to code something or some learning new endpoints or something. We're still going to build that stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you sort of want to understand where are the macro trends? What is Microsoft's vision and how does it apply to our organization so that we can move forward faster than our competitors and our and the other people in our space?
Yeah, it's like global nav, right? That's one of the things we get asked to do over and over and over again. And, you know, you have to see the vision of where Microsoft's coming, sort of guess when it might be here, and then how important is what you might need for global nav now? Is it enough to invest? How much should we invest based on what you can get and what you absolutely must have day one, right? Yeah. And make that trade-off. You know, some companies are really big and their ecosystem demands that they have a multilingual global nav that has dynamic content on it and all that kind of stuff. That might be your corporate culture and it's worth investing in. But another company might be smaller with several thousand employees maybe, and maybe they don't. I mean, maybe a simple HTML global nav could get them through the, you know, the worst part, or use some hub sites,
and know that Microsoft is going to be rolling it out less than 6 months now. But if we look back 6 months or a year, we were writing those things. We did it for a number of customers. So you want to make sure that you keep an eye on what's coming, because some of this code you write, you're going to throw away. Mm-hmm. You're going to say, oh, Microsoft did it. They did it better, or they covered it in a way that is now part of the platform. We should be on that ride as opposed to the custom code ride.
Or maybe they didn't do it as good as we did it, but that's one less thing that I got to maintain.
Yeah.
So let me delete it, let somebody else worry about it, and I don't have to worry about it.
Making that informed decision. Can I fall back to what Microsoft implemented, or do I, multilingual is a great example of this too, because I helped write a customized solution for multilingual for a customer, and they're using that, and yes, Microsoft's coming out with a multilingual solution. Will it meet their needs exactly, or do we need to stay on the customized solution that we wrote for a while longer until their solution matures? And that is a decision that we need to make with an educated client, right? Like, they have to keep, the onus is somewhat on the consumer too, right? Like, we might be experts, we might try to, you know, stay up to date as much as we can, but, you know, it's like going into a car dealership completely uninformed. You should, as a consumer, at least try to a little bit keep up with things, because you want to understand the conversation you're having with your consultants or your own IT shop, right?
Yeah, there's a a clothing store up in New England. The tagline, Size Sims, the Sims clothing. I don't know if you remember that one. He's like, an educated consumer is the best consumer. Well, it's that's exactly true. You know, when somebody comes to us with, you know, they've done their homework and they understand how all these things sort of fit together and they've made some decisions about that and they want our help that is specialized based on what we know, they're way ahead of somebody who comes to us and says, what should we do? So that burden of staying educated, I think, you know, change is constant. It's always been constant. It's not just IT. It's not just our technology space. If you're in marketing, things change all the time too.
Yep.
You just have to keep up with what's going on and figure out best ways to do it.
Yeah. Okay. I got a couple pointed questions for you guys. What has been like the thing that got you the most jazzed about that you've seen so far over the last day and a half? Was it something from the Vision keynote? If you went to the Microsoft 365 technology keynote, if you went to, I guess we're all 365 people, so Jeff Tepper's keynote. What is the thing that just kind of like, wow, or something like that really got you? You're looking forward to getting your hands on.
I've got one.
Sweet.
I think this Project Cortex thing, which to me is, and I've tweeted this, I think it may be. You know, I always believe things once I've actually touched them.
Sure.
You know, but from what I can see from all the messaging, it may be that sort of knowledge management engine that we've wanted for a really, really long time. Microsoft has made some what turned out to be false starts at this for a while, but now that the cloud is as powerful as it is, the ability to sort of in real time apply AI and provide targeted solutions for people who are looking for things with a lot of context wrapped around it. You know, these are the people who know about this. These are the documents that we've written about this stuff. These are meetings that have happened about it. You know, just sort of understanding all of the connectedness around ideas is incredibly powerful. It's not going to replace the value of a subject matter expert, which I think is probably going to be the next fear. Mm-hmm. It is going to allow us to connect the people together, the person who has a need and the person who knows how to fulfill that need based on what they know, and just get those connections happening at a much, much faster rate. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that Project Cortex starts to play out within the UIs. You know, we're seeing AI starting to crop up in so many places now in these platforms. And, you know, it's exciting and scary to me. You know, I keep thinking Skynet, but, you know, if Skynet helps me find some information I need and gets me more productive and this Project Cortex turns into Skynet, well, then it feels like it's
the
right...
Let the Terminator come.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, let me...
How it starts, right?
Help me find a document, just don't nuke me. I mean, it's pretty simple, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah. We get Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics and apply it to Skynet, we're fine.
I would think so.
Yeah.
How about you, Julie? Do you have something that just kind of, wow?
I kind of have two.
No, sorry, you do one.
Yeah.
No, I'm just
all right,
kidding.
I'll fix it.
You can have my turn.
Search modernization.
Oh, okay.
Search modernization. So from my Office 365 hat, the search modernization is really, I'm excited finally, because I think that has been the hanging thing that just the biggest thing that wasn't done. Because customized search solutions in SharePoint prior to the modernization was really powerful. And to not have that has been kind of like, well, okay, I get it. You can't move from classic because that's just not there. So I think that's the big one. I guess I would kind of also say the fluid framework, but we'll see, right? Yeah. That's like, it's exciting technically.
Yeah.
We'll see what it ends up being for more than.
What are we going to be able to do with it? What are we going to be able to do? It'll be interesting to see that.
I got one more. Can I do one more?
You can do one more. Yes. All right. You actually blew the sandbox quota, but you can have one more.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I think it's really important to mention that metadata is becoming a first class citizen. And we use, I think a lot of people use that word metadata to mean lots and lots of different things, but the ability to categorize content and tag it or categorize it, whatever words you want to use, having a better taxonomy, a modernization of the managed metadata service. I haven't seen what the content type hub is turning into yet. I'm hoping they're going to talk about that sometime this week. But just seeing all of that become first class citizens again, because it sort of sat it sort of fell by the wayside over the last couple of years. And I think people have paid less attention to that, applying that rigor to their content and suffered for it a bit. And so I'm really, really glad to see these enhancements. I think it's going to make people's lives much easier. It's going to make, you know, findability for search possible. You can't have an enhanced search experience without having some content that's tagged correctly.
There's a way to do it, but you have to know how to do it. It's not easy. It's not configurable. I mean, you got to run PowerShell and stuff. I mean, that's not for the everyday configuration person of an intranet.
You want to upload some content, make it work.
Yeah. I sat down with Mikhail Svensson earlier today, and I'll add on one thing to what you said that is the big thing to me about the content types and the improvements to what we have with managed metadata. It's not so much that we can do that with the content. The thing that is, I think, is what's going to be the game changer that I'm interested in about Project Cortex is that the best way we've been able to do ECM makes the most sense. Search makes the most sense and was most effective when it has a good data set that it can work on. And we've had the ability to tag content in the past. We've had the ability to classify content in the past. But we've always relied on the user to do it. We tried to make it easier. And this way, they're taking a different approach of the machine can learn a lot of stuff about your content and you can create your own models that I think they're going to talk about it at a session tomorrow afternoon, but they are at some point this week. I know they're talking about Project Cortex. It's this afternoon.
Late today.
That's right. It's late today. Like 4:30 or 5:30 or something. Right. By the fact that the models and the AI and the machine language, what they can figure this stuff out and they can do a lot of that classification that people weren't doing before, and then it enables more of these scenarios.
The
we get really good data.
The PDF where they just tag the areas on the form and then they uploaded all the invoices in and it just populated all the metadata. I was like, okay.
Did they show that one already this week?
They showed it in Jeff's.
Okay.
No. I know
we saw it as a pre-briefing kind of a thing, which is fine because this will come out after they show it later today, so we won't be in trouble. I know they're going to show it.
It looks like magic when you see these demos.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that people understand that it is sort of magic, right? Yeah. It's a demo. Those POs have a very concise structure. They're predictable. There are only 8 of them. They're all the same. So it's really cool. So I don't think we're yet at the point where we just don't have to do metadata ourselves. And I know you weren't saying that. I think people need to be a little more cautious about it. I think you still want to be applying your own personal rigor. I don't think that machine learning and AI replaces what's in smart people's brains yet.
Right.
And I'm not sure when that's going to happen. I'm hoping that it never really happens, because what we bring as human beings, as information workers, to that whole process ought to be different than what machine learning can do. But yes, we're starting to see those capabilities augment what we can do, or like you said, sort of lead it.
Yeah.
Here's some suggestions, or here is some preliminary categorization.
Well, the whole thing about machine learning and AI, the machine isn't really learning and making those decisions. We've given it a model on how to figure that stuff out. And it's like the best way to look at this, I think, is when they did like the image classification stuff, where a lot of times it would come out and it would say, like it goes through and is trying to figure out being able to detect dogs in pictures. And so you give it a bunch of pictures of dogs and you give it a lot of pictures of cats and say, these are not dogs, these are dogs. And you give it a picture and it's like going, yeah, I think that this is a dog. Yeah, I think this is a dog. And this is not a dog, going back and forth. And then it finally is like, I think this is a dog. You're like, no, it's not a dog. And the machine looks at it and it can actually figure out, like going, oh, I didn't think that this, I thought this was a dog, but now I understand why it's not a dog. So it goes in the other one and it learns from that. And that's the kind of, this is still human input giving it that kind of information there, right? So
it's just an elaborate pattern, really.
Yeah.
It's a very elaborate pattern that we're trying to get it to do some of the mundane stuff so that people can do more fun stuff.
Well, right? And that's the key. I think you said something really important. It's just like when people move from on-prem and they're not having to run their own servers because it's all up in the cloud and Microsoft does it for us. Well, IT pros are not out of business. They just have much cooler stuff to do now.
Yeah.
And the same thing is going to happen with a lot of this machine learning stuff. We won't have to worry about whether it's a dog or not.
Yeah.
That's covered. We got that. We've trained that model and it's right, 99s, right? So we're good.
Yeah.
But what that means is then we can start focusing on the important stuff, which is not necessarily a bunch of meetings to talk about boring stuff. It ought to be innovation and efficiency and coming up with new product ideas and all kinds of stuff like that is what people are good at.
Right.
The machines are not good at that.
Right.
When they get good at that stuff, then we get scared.
It's going to be the ability, like if you have managed metadata, it's going to have a term set that has referring to internal company projects. And one of your projects is called Project Jupiter. And you upload a document and it's, I historically have a lot of content that has been tagged with Project Jupiter. And I upload a new document and that document doesn't have Project Jupiter in the title. It doesn't have it in the file name. It doesn't have it in the metadata. But it's referred to Project Jupiter multiple times inside the content or inside the metadata. It's going to tag it as, that smells like Project Jupiter. And so it'll automatically tag it as that. You can always change it. But I mean, that's the stuff where AI really helps. Okay, last question for you guys. This one is, I'm definitely hitting you blindside with this and I'm doing it intentionally. Okay? No, but it's a, this is a fun one though. Okay, you have roughly a week to go play. No work, no family, no household chores. You get to go off and do like one of like, you know, one of like Bill Gates' like Think Week kind of things. What do you want to go grab and just go play with and learn more
about? Is this
about
what we do at work?
No, not work.
Not you.
Work is what the customers tell you they're going to do. No, but like, what would you want to go dive into? And if you got to think about it for a second, I'll share with you what mine is. So for me, are you ready for?
Yeah, I mean, I know.
You ready? Oh, yeah, let's go with you first.
Yeah, well, because
I'm interviewing you.
You started me down this path. I definitely need to go deep in the Azure DevOps pipelines build stuff. I mean, I've dabbled now a little bit and I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I just want to get the testing frameworks in there, figure out the pipelines, get the CI/CD thing humming, like pristine humming, and make it a pattern that then I can repeat.
Okay.
That it's that last part. You know, I may understand it all, but I need to build it into something that as some praxis we can use as a repeatable pattern. And I'm excited about finding some time, I don't know, to do it.
All right, good. So you will be getting a Word document in the next week of the outline of my chapter and telling me if it would answer your questions and what
awesome.
You're looking for, because that's what I need.
Very good. Did we do this before with TypeScript?
Yep. Are you ready, Mark?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think that the Project Cortex stuff looks really, really fascinating to me. I think my week might need to be out of a month or two, because I want to make sure I have something that's gelled enough so that I can really play with it.
Yeah.
But I want to understand what it can do and where its boundaries are. I want to be able to throw some real world-ish kind of things at it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because, you know, lots of times we look at this stuff, you know, I'm a cynic and a skeptic. I don't know if you've ever noticed that about me. But you know, I think sometimes the promise is bigger than the reality. And I'd like to understand what I can be as enthusiastic about as I want to be. So getting to throw some content at that engine and seeing what happens. You know, what weird things happen that seem magical, because I think there will be some.
So mine kind of ties into yours a bit. So mine is, I understand what it is, but I don't really understand how I can use it and what I can do with it. I want to just take myself away and just go dive into the AI, the ML, the cognitive services. How do you build a model? What does that mean? What does it mean? There's enough, a lot of the AI stuff since Microsoft has really kind of dived into it, and they first dove into it, it felt like it was very much data science-y stuff and very much PhD kind of stuff. But now it feels, I'm trying to make sure I have a good idea of when they're just throwing the word AI on there the same way they throw .NET on everything and just kind of like, oh, no, wait, that's not, you throw cloud on it. That doesn't mean, I don't think you know what that means, but the way that you threw the word on
there. Now
that,
they're
right?
they're referring to quantum.
Yeah.
We're not using quantum yet.
Yeah. I want to know more about it. I want to build a couple of models and say, like, how can I go through but I need a scenario to do that. And I can do that with my business, but there's a lot of stuff that I want to be able to, I want to learn more about. And it's not something that it's a topic that I don't feel that you can just say, I need to use it for this project. So let me just try this little piece here. I'm like, nah, I really feel like I kind of need to immerse myself for a week or so and just go through some labs and let me build some stuff out. Let me see what this means and how can I apply this. And so that now I want to understand more. If I can understand more about how you're doing something, then I have a better idea of what you're able to do. And that's part of me with Cortex, is that I want to understand more about what I can do with AI. And so that I understand what you guys are doing. Maybe I don't know if I can do it, but I understand what you're doing. So I understand where you're hitting those boundaries. Where are the walls put up for you on what you can do? Kind of what you were talking about.
Well, I think, you know, my suspicion is that it's going to be a step change in the way we think about accomplishing a lot of things. Mm-hmm. The question is, you know, which things can you take that leap? No one can see my hands.
Yeah.
Which things can you take that leap up to the next step with realistically, and which things do you, you know, you still have to do a bit of harder work to get to.
Yeah. By learning,
and I think we sort of think the same way about that. We want to understand enough about what's going on underneath to be able to believe it.
Yeah.
Well, and that gives you the added benefit of once you understand what that's built on, what are the building blocks, when you hit the boundaries, you can then assess, well, since I know how this is and what that boundary is, now I can kind of start hearing things and see where the future is and when they might be able to break those boundaries, right?
Yep.
Like if you don't understand what it's built on, you will have no ability to fortune tell what might be coming or what could be fixed on the limitations
you
see.
Or how do you build that extra 20% that's not there yet? So
right.
That,
can we use a customization that will get us there? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or like for me in the Cortex, I'm looking to find out when the APIs are going to be available. So when can I start taking advantage of, I get what you guys have built. And yeah, it's pretty and it's cool for the end users, but I got an idea and I'd like to be able to build a content based app, but I want to be able to leverage what you guys have done. And how can I take what you've done and pull it into my stuff, and how can I leverage it? And I know that they're working on it. I know that those APIs are coming, and I just want to know more about what does that mean? When you say we're going to have APIs around this, like, huh? So what does that mean? Like, what do you mean? What does that mean? I'm like, what does that mean? What am I really going to get? What can I do?
They're going to be APIs.
Yeah. Okay, we checked the box.
Somebody asked me, actually, what I was talking to one of the Microsoft people, and they're like, well, what APIs do you need? And I just blank stare right back. I'm like, all of them.
Yeah. I need them all. Yeah. I need them all, and I need them rest.
And actually, not half joking aside, this is an enterprise solution, right? Like, this is not for, you know, Joe's donut shop or whatever. Yeah. This is an enterprise level solution. So if those APIs aren't there early, the adoption curve is going to be slower because they're going to hit the edges really quick, and they're going to want to be able to invest and do that, what you're talking about.
But also having a good set of APIs validates your architecture. So it's a really important thing for them to do, not as an afterthought, which I think happens too often.
It feels that way.
It from out here, sometimes it feels that way. If you're thinking of, or at least documenting what the APIs will be, even if you haven't built them yet, then you're making sure that architecture is going to be valid for other people to use as well.
So, I think they build them and don't share them is probably part of the
problem. That may be the case, because obviously first-party stuff is going to start using these things first, and they're probably trying to work out the kinks. So, but you know, I think those APIs are a big reflection of how good the architecture is, in fact.
There was an ad a couple years ago. There was an ad on Thanksgiving that Microsoft ran. It was about Kinect. It was about the Xbox Kinect. And it said, look at all these things that we created, these APIs, and look at all these things that people have built. But then it said, and this is the coolest part. I get chills every time I think about this. But the thing that really stood out to us is the things that people built that we didn't think about. And that's what the APIs do. Like they've built all this infrastructure, and they get all these models they're building and all this stuff they're going to take advantage of. And what we're seeing in all the screenshots and all the videos and all the very scripted demos of the very early product right now, we're seeing what their rationalization is and what their implementation is on this stuff. But what the APIs allow us to do is, not everybody in Redmond is going to figure all this out. There are people who are going to have specific business scenarios going, that is something that I can use in my business, and here's how I'm going to use it. And when I build it and then I show it to them, they're going to be like, we didn't think of that, and we could put that in there. And it's like, exactly.
That's what happens at those developer kitchens that we go to. You know, they throw us at a problem for 3 days or however many days it is, and people build stuff, and they're like, huh, we didn't actually think anyone would do that. And so then they can take that back, and they can decide what to do with it.
Yeah.
And that's very informal. That's not, you know, it's usually just something fun.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, there are going to be people seeing these new capabilities and thinking of all kinds of stuff that Microsoft has never thought of.
Yeah.
And that's fun. That's really cool.
That's where it does get fun. That's where this job is good.
If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The Gift of Time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com.
All right, guys, I really appreciate you sitting down and taking the time to talk to me. How can people find you? Where's the best place that they can go to find each one of you? Julie?
Well, we have on Twitter, we're Simpraxis C, so you can follow us on Twitter, and we're simpraxisconsulting.com for the business all up. And I am JFJ1997 on Twitter.
Mark. And I am Simp Mark, SympMarc.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a great conference. Yeah.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes in the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.